It's time for Mech Break Weekly. Jason Snell is here with Andy Yanaka, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay to talk about the new Facebook phone. Is it a reality? What's wrong with Apple's iCloud? And Stickman Golf, a special plea from Jason Snell. It's all coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 344, recorded Tuesday, April 2nd, 2013. The hamburger in the basement. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere, on your devices. All streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free two-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And to kick off the new release of Dimension of Miracles, Audible is sending a lucky winner to Comic-Con. Enter at audible.com/sweeps. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK4. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. And we have a jam-packed panel, so full that we have a kind of a legendary Mac writer in the audience. We couldn't even get him on the panel. There's so many people. The audience is overflowing. Alex Lindsay is here. It's nice to see you once again, sir.
It's good to be here.
After your contretemps, New York City with the sewage. We'll talk about that later. I don't want to bring that up again.
Yes.
Also in studio with us from IDG, Jason Snell. He's editorial director there for PC World and Mac World magazines.
Good to be back.
Good to have you. Thank you for coming.
I love being here.
To your left, Andy Yanaka, the girl or the tiger?
That is a modernistic take on Calvin and Hobbes. Where
Hobbes, I love that.
A more scary and dangerous looking a tiger. And there you go.
Hard to say greatest comic of all time, but certainly in the top three.
Definitely top five.
Top five. Because you got tough. You got Doonesbury. You got Peanuts. You got Pogo.
Bloom County.
Because he punched Bill Watterson punched out early, it will always be the legend of the series that just simply ended well before anybody wanted it.
Might have been. Also with us, all the way on the right hand side of the screen, Mr. Renee Ritchie. If you're listening at home, he's in your left channel.
I'm just freaked out by that Calvin on Hulk serum that Andy's showing off today.
Calvin on Hulk serum.
Sorry, Hobbs on Hulk serum.
Hobbs is big. Yeah, look at Hobbs.
Hulk. That's been working out.
If the comic strip had continued, that's how big Hobbs would have gotten.
Mo should not be pushing Calvin around with that kind of muscle behind him.
Mandibles of death. Well, it's good to see you all on the eve of the most exciting announcement in tech history, the new Facebook phone. We'll be here day after tomorrow. I know. It's hard not to laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, you're just like, okay.
I think this is an example of Facebook kind of not clear on the fact that people use it but hate it. Right? So they say, we've got a billion users. We should be masters of the universe.
And of course, if we get our aunts and our parents to learn how to use anything else, we would not be using Facebook. But we can't get our aunts and our parents to use anything else but Facebook.
It took us a long time to get them onto Facebook. That's the whole thing. Is we went through a lot of effort to get our friends onto there. But everyone you talk to, I mean, that's their Achilles heel. Everyone says the only reason that they're using Facebook is because everyone else is using it. If something else comes along that everyone else is using, Facebook is toast.
And, you know, Facebook was smart because Instagram started to be that. As simple as it is, I look at my kids, that's how they share. And I think a lot of kids, and so Facebook was smart. $1 billion for Instagram actually turned out not to be a bad idea. It was to keep them from losing their audience to another social network. But how long can they keep buying the competition?
It will be hard because their main competition is not something that's buyable.
So I think Renee Ritchie knows something about what Facebook. We're trying to decide whether we should do live coverage of it or not. And Facebook has cheated us so many times with these announcements.
We decided against it. We're going to send people, but we're not even live blogging.
No. Okay,
we sent somebody.
You did send somebody. Are you live blogging?
Phil Nickenson from Android Central is going to be there. I believe he's live blogging it.
Okay. iMore.com's Renee Ritchie. I didn't finish your introduction.
I've heard things about this. So tell us. Two years ago, Facebook hired Eric Tsang, who was one of the guys running Android for Google, and they hired Mike Mattis, who was the guy who helped start the delicious, you know, highly textured, rich graphic design era of modern apps. And the reportedly from several people I've heard that Mark Zuckerberg invited them over and did the Steve Jobs walk around the park, putting his arm on their shoulder and saying, if you want to dent the universe now, Facebook is the way to do it. And these were iOS designers, developers, some jailbreak guys. I mean, really the right people that you want to target if you want to start attacking mobile. And then it's been really quiet for 2 years. And you know, like Eric Tsang and Mike Mattis haven't been redesigning news feeds for the last 2 years. So mobile is clearly the future. And what it looks like is that it's not a phone. It's not even a skin. It's not something like Amazon did with their complete fork of Android. It's not even something like TouchWiz from Samsung. But it's sort of an enhanced app, almost like a launcher, where Facebook can sort of intermediate Android and make sure that they're the first thing that you hit on the phone, and they can get access to all your sharing and all your data, all your demographics.
Again,
and it's a smart play.
It's like unclear on the subject. What are you going to tell people? Look, we put a new app on here. It works pretty much the same, and you got a little widget. But the good part about this is we'll intercept all your communications.
Well, I mean, Facebook is popular in some parts of the world. There are phones that you can get that only run Facebook, and everyone messages through that. And they're starting to introduce voice over IP through Facebook.
They want phone calls Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's really smart from Facebook's point of view. It's like a face hugger from Aliens Attack, where they're going to latch onto Android and inject their DNA into it.
Precisely.
And that stops them from being competition, because Google pissed off a lot of people by releasing Android to kind of hedge against being locked out by Apple and Microsoft, thus ensuring they would be locked out by Apple and Microsoft. And Facebook kind of wants to have the best of both worlds.
And Android is a great target for that, because the amount of customization they can do without having to root the device, without having to have their own hardware, their own, even their own fork of Android, really all they have to do is write a really good launcher, tap into the notification system, and really anyone can download, and conceivably anybody could download this, flip two switches to get everything working, and now Facebook is really, to continue Renee's fine analogy, this is the alien blood that will continue to dissolve any part of your privacy until it reaches open space.
Well, I mean, we can mock Facebook, but there are some people for whom Facebook. I mean, and we should mock Facebook, but there are some people for whom Facebook is the internet. There's the web, and then there are people on Facebook, and they do use Facebook messaging instead of email. I mean, there are people who are very Facebook centric, and giving them a product that works the way they see the internet working, which is through Facebook, is not the worst thing in the world, even if it's not for us nerdier people.
Is it a handset or is it just software?
It's software, but I believe they're going to be using HTC as sort of an early adopter proof of concept demonstration, so you can see what a phone looks like when they have this sort of agreement and they come shipped with the Facebook experience. Like, if you read the invitation, it says, come see Facebook's
our
new home
on
Android.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what it is. It's a home experience on Android.
So HTC might incorporate it into Sense 5?
Some phones will have it. Some. I think that demo phone. So, I mean, it's a good idea, because if there's a, we're sending, like I said, Phil Nickenson there, and if they can put a phone in his hand that day showing him what it's like, then that's what he's going to write about. It's a much better story for them.
So the event is Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. So what we're going to do, we do TNT Tech News today at that time. I think we'll just do TNT and and cover it, and as stuff comes through, we'll just add it to TNT. I think that's how we're going to do it. We were thinking of moving TNT, but I think it's up to Tom. But I think we're just going to cover it that way. I don't think it's a big enough announcement to break format.
Nothing I've heard says that it's going to be noteworthy. I'm going to be given that to cover this, all I have to do is arrange to be in a comfortable chair with a computer in my lap. I'm going to be covering it, but I don't think I'll be. I don't think it's going to be a big
deal. We'll be watching with mild interest.
And it's interesting for HTC, because they're not doing well. So if they are the ones that are getting shown off with Facebook, then it's probably an agreement that you could never do this on Apple. Samsung is too powerful and too wealthy on their own to do this. But HTC is still struggling, so it makes sense.
Yeah. But the question is, that is Facebook now the people who are passionate about social messaging have kind of moved beyond Facebook mostly. The people who are using it are the folks who want something easy and ubiquitous, who they enjoy that kind of content with their far-flung family and friends, but they're not really passionate about it enough to I'm going to install a really major experience on my phone as opposed to having it as an app. So I'm not questioning it, but this is an area which I really it doesn't fit in with what I understand to be what Facebook is going to be really, really good at.
It's probably comforting. I mean, some people will walk into a store and they'll see a phone that comes with a Facebook home screen. And for them, you know, they're not really into... There's a lot of Android users who just don't use Android. It's the next feature phone that they buy. And for them, you know, they know Facebook. They're comforted by it. Facebook was really smart. They took over the browser, walled it off, and provided an experience that a lot of people spend a lot of time in. And if they could walk into Android and wall off a section, they might provide the same experience on mobile.
Yeah. It does point to something really interesting, though, that I find that more people have allegiance to the services they use on their phone rather than the phone itself. So that you're right. They don't really think of this as an Android phone. They don't even particularly think of it as an iPhone. They think of it as the host organism that they use to access Facebook, to access Twitter, to access their contact manager and that sort of stuff. So that's a way to make the hardware and the operating system almost irrelevant if they can produce a better experience. So it makes you want to extrapolate further to see how much harder is it going to be for Google and for Apple to assert that, hey, here is why your choice of hardware matters. Here's why your choice of operating system matters. I know that you're getting the exact same apps on both platforms, that increasingly both of these apps look identical feature for feature, button for button. But please, we promise you there is a difference between an iPhone and an Android device.
HTC's One will be available on AT&T. You could pre-order starting April 4th, day after tomorrow, same day this is the same day the Facebook phone is announced, and that it'll arrive on the 16th. They're the first to have it in the U.S. And this is the first Android phone to kind of look hardware-wise like it might compete with the Apple iPhone.
Yeah, I've been talking to people.
It's pretty.
A lot of Android phone watchers and mobile phone watchers in general who say this is actually the beautiful industrial design phone. You know, the Galaxy S4 is going to be popular, and Samsung's
going to
look, but it's going to be plastic and have a big screen. And it's going to be, you know, what it is. But the HTC One, you know, really is an eye catcher.
Do you think then there'll be a Facebook skew of the One? Is that how they're going to do it?
Well, that's the big mystery, right? Is this going to be a Facebook phone? Is this just going to be a Facebook layer that goes on a bunch of different phones
HTC
or other vendors?
One F, you know?
Or will you just be able to log into Facebook and it'll all show up? I don't know. You know, Facebook isn't we're all going to mock it. Everybody who's watching this show and who's in the chat room are going to mock Facebook. But you know, I just had something. I had a illness in the family and was gone for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I share everything on social media, on Twitter. Everybody who follows me knows I share too much on Twitter. But that was something that I realized. I ended up sharing all of my experiences there on Facebook and not on Twitter, because Twitter wants to be a broadcast medium.
Right.
And Facebook actually lets you talk to a subset of people who are the people you have a personal relationship with, or whoever you've decided to have that one-to-one relationship with. And you know, I would love to do that on Twitter and have groups that I could share to, but Twitter's not interested in that. Twitter wants to be a broadcast medium. And so for some things, I was shocked, but I turned to Facebook.
I'm not
shocked. I knew there.
That's what keeps them alive.
Yeah, and so that's the value of Facebook, is that you have a little more control over who your relationships are, whereas Twitter, it's really anybody who wants to. I'm standing on the corner shouting, and if you want to hear me, here I am.
Maybe the phone, a Facebook phone, though, isn't really, as people kind of already alluded to, not a U.S. phone, but a phone for places where Facebook is the real web. It reminds me a lot of AOL. It's like living within a walled garden, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some people want an AOL phone, or would have had one been available.
Well, I can see
that would have been very popular. If AOL had had a phone in 1992, everyone would have had an AOL phone.
I can see somebody going into an AT&T store or a Verizon store and saying, I want a phone with Facebook. You know, and if you've got one, you can pull out and say it's totally integrated with Facebook. For those users, then great. That's a selling point for some people.
When you have 30 phones and you're trying to give them one more option, that's another option available.
Arguably, the iPhone was an iTunes phone when it first launched, and people were really excited they could get all their iTunes
rocker
stuff.
Was. Remember that?
There have been a couple of phones where back in the keypad era, where they would have an integrated Facebook button on it that you can just for texting pretty much directly to Facebook. And exactly. There are 100 reasons why it failed, but the fact that it wasn't one of those failures that was good enough to spur on a second version of this, at least, I guess it just says at least five years ago, the world wasn't ready for it.
Tim Cook apologizes to China in Chinese. There were complaints. I'm not sure where they were coming from. It seemed like the Chinese state-run media, so I would guess from the Chinese government, saying that Apple's warranty policies were illegal, not okay, Fortune has some speculation about why it was coming from state-run media. Central TV did a China Central TV did an expose on iPhone repair policies. People's Daily attacked the company for 4 days in a row, devoting half a page to negative articles. Five theories. Apple's behaving badly. It is possible. In fact, Apple does discriminate against Chinese users with poor return and warranty policies. Two, Apple hasn't, they say, courted the right officials. courted
paid.
Is one way of yeah, saying exactly. it. Three, Apple's trying to bolster its domestic, China is trying to bolster its domestic smartphone makers. Chinese military owns a big chunk of Huawei, for instance. China's trying to strengthen the hand of its state-owned mobile phone carriers like China Telecom, which is, and China Unicom, which is, the two and three carriers. And China's retaliating for Congress's treatment of Huawei and ZTE. Now, Tim Cook apologized, so apparently...
It's a very different approach from Steve Jobs, who probably would have told them to go, you know.
Yeah, because Apple's return policy in China is, as far as I can tell, it's not obvious.
It's different.
It's the same. 14-day return on newly purchased products, full refund on returns by cash or credit card, one-year warranty on defective hardware, replace with new or refurbished parts, minimum 90-day warranty on repairs. That's the same in the U.S. Yeah. and China.
It seems more likely that China is
this is more about politics.
It's more politics than anything technical.
Yeah, and Apple is trying. This is Apple's fastest growing market.
So Apple doesn't want to mess around.
Apple does not want to mess around here, and Apple, I think, will do what it needs to do to get out of the way of this and basically say, hey, if you want to pick a fight with the U.S. government, don't have it be about us. We'll see how it goes. But it is the fastest market.
I think the Chinese are also concerned. I mean, I think that it's probably valid that they are concerned about having a closed system growing quickly in their own country that they don't control. You know,
the real concern, right?
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I have there been stories about whether they would intercede in sort of app approvals and
well, they're Chinese not doing that, but it's store. I think this is a good way to kind of cut Apple off at the knees and try to slow them down, because the issue is that, and this is what the U.S. government's concerned about, is China building stuff into their hardware that allows, you know, all kinds of backdoors and so on and so forth.
Apple's initial response was, what are you talking about? The Steve Jobs response, what are you talking about? It's the same. Mm-hmm. And then the very interesting Tim Cook response, which is clearly political. The poor translation that I'm reading here on 9 to 5 Mac. In the past 2 weeks, we've received a lot of feedback about Apple and China repair and warranty policy. We are not only a profound reflection on these reviews, these views. I think he means but this is very Chinese.
Deeply concerned
think long and hard about this, together with the relevant departments, to carefully study the three guarantees and to also look at our maintenance policy communication, combing our management specifications. We are aware that due to lack of external communication in this process, we didn't pay off the right people, obviously, and lead to the speculation that Apple arrogance do not care or do not attach importance to consumer feedback. This is it's very Chinese apology.
Yes.
Very interesting.
I'm sure there was a lot of people that worked on that very hard.
So they are going to improve the repair policy on the 4 and 4S. They're going to be very clear on the website. Increase the intensity of supervision and training of Apple authorized service providers. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It's prostrating themselves.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just underscores what you said, which is it is a big freaking market.
Vital.
Yeah.
And fast growing for Apple.
How far do you think Apple would go, though, if the government actually started making demands that, look, we have a statewide policy where you can't sell communications hardware in our country that we can't drill directly into. We're going to require you to have a special version of the firmware or a special version of the hardware for our market to make sure that our needs as a state operator of all communication services can be fulfilled. Do you think that they would say, absolutely, we will design a whole new SKU for you? Or would they say, there are things that we can't do as a company, and when 1.4 billion people this is one of the reasons why we have $100 billion in the bank, so that we can say no when this is a really bad demand.
Well, isn't this exactly what Google went through?
Yeah,
and Google's decision was to pull out. BlackBerry's decision was to cave.
Right. Mm-hmm.
BlackBerry gave India the source code to BlackBerry server. And did they do the same for China?
Singapore, I think. They put a proxy in place.
Yep. I don't think the mainland China has done anything with BlackBerry, but maybe.
Yeah, but Google's not, or at least back then, they weren't in the business of producing hardware. Like they're not making millions and millions of copies.
But China wanted to see inside the searches.
Yeah,
that's kind of the same, isn't it?
Well, but I'm talking about the practicality of it's one thing to make a decision that it's okay that we're going to kowtow to a government. It's another thing to say here is what we would have to do in order to comply with that.
Well, what Google does have though is a lot of Chinese handset manufacturers using Android. In Chinese-made phones.
Well, that's one of the advantages of being decentralized is the disadvantage that Apple has it's one thing to say
you can shut the stores.
Why didn't someone grease the right palms and everything else? But you can't do that as an American company, legally in American law. Whereas if you have a bunch of Chinese handset manufacturers, they can do whatever they want.
What does China do? What does Apple do in China? Do they take the BlackBerry route and give them the source code and say, sure, we'll have a special Chinese version of the iPhone? Or do they take the Google route and say, hey, we're not going to do business in a company?
So far Apple hasn't asked. I don't think the Chinese have asked for it because their communication servers are. You know, we don't know. But their communication servers are so good at combing through what's passing through them. I mean, those handsets still have to access
still the
cloud.
Right. And that said, China is the only country where Apple has a specifically swappable set of services on Mac and iOS, where if you're in China, when you set up a Mac or an iPhone, it doesn't offer you Twitter and Facebook. It offers you their Chinese equivalents those are essentially supervised by the Chinese government. So Apple's trying to play within the rules in China and make a good experience for users in China. And the question is, is that going to be enough? Is access to the internet and services that are supervised by the Chinese government good enough for them or not? And I have no idea if that's true.
And with BlackBerry, the network operations center meant that they had a centralized place to pull all the data that was moving between the phone and RIM servers. And Apple has a whole bunch of different servers, some which are person-to-person and some which are provided by Apple. So it's a much more complicated proposition, which kind of helps them with this.
Fascinating. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more with our great panel. I am very pleased to have... Oh, and I mentioned we have a legend in the studio with us, Scott Canaster, who wrote. So what's the best-selling Apple book you wrote, Scott? Was it HyperCard for Dummies? How to Write Mac Software. I probably have all of them. Now working in developer relations at Google, of all things. Writing How to Write Google Software, I presume. I don't know. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Hulu Plus. Have you got a Hulu Plus account yet? If you like watching television, this is the best way to watch television.
I have it.
You do?
Yeah. My kids have gotten very good at Hulu.
SpongeBob?
No, actually, Nova. So there's like a ton
now
of
Nova.
Now,
that's awesome. Hearing that.
Well, my son is obsessed. There's one Nova special on Venom, and my son watches it probably once a week. He figured
snakes.
Out how to use it and everything
he
else.
Loves
he just
snakes.
He loves the snakes and the spiders and the, you know, so he...
I like spiders and snakes.
But it was amazing how much is, you know, when... I started noodling around with it and then just realized that it was really something we had to add to what we had at the house. You know,
$7.99 a month, and you get... current season hit shows from Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. That's how I watch The Daily Show and Colbert.
Right.
Fox, NBC, ABC, and more.
And Nova.
Nova. I didn't realize that's great. So this is the Hulu Plus on Metro, which is actually pretty sweet. Look at this.
Yeah, that's great.
There's a new Apple TV version of this, which is great. They've really done a nice job. It looks kind of a little bit like Netflix, right? It's here's late. Oh, this is fine. So you heard, Jimmy Fallon and Jay Leno addressing the Tonight Show rumors, right? And you said, well, I don't want to see that.
Right.
Well, you fire up your Hulu Plus, and there's the clip right there. You could watch the entire show. Or you can watch the clip on your Hulu Plus. Now, we got a special deal for you. 2-week free trial when you go to HuluPlus.com/twit. HuluPlus.com. Look how good the quality is on this.
That's great.
Stream shows.
No, we use it on the Apple TV.
Apple
TV
is a great way to do it. PS3, Xbox 360. Roku has it. Mobile phones have it. As you see, this is a beauty. The Metro version on this is spectacular. If you're using Windows 8, pretty much, Blu-ray players. Pretty much every TV comes with it now. Tablet apps, iPad app. Anyway, take a look. You try it out for free. HuluPlus.com/twit. A 2-week trial, double the time. when you use that special URL. We thank Hulu Plus so much for supporting our program, Mac Break Weekly. And you, by the way, you can AirPlay it, right?
Yes.
Put it right on the TV.
Although I said, I don't know what a TV's like. Every TV we have, we just put Apple TV onto it. It's like,
what does a TV do these days?
To it. You know, it's like, okay, we're done.
All right, let me stop Leno. This is the only thing I have not yet figured out. Metro is so weird. Watch how I close this program on Metro. I swipe down and off. Is that weird? And now what? Nothing.
Yeah, you're in.
I have a green screen. Oh, don't show that. There we go. That's my Hulu Plus login. I'm going to have to change that one right now. Moving along, ladies and gentlemen. iRadio is coming. That's what a music executive says. Apple's pushing for a summer launch of its first streaming service to compete with Spotify and RDO.
Well, here's the question. Is it a Pandora or a Spotify type? I mean, because if it's just the radio thing, it's like yawn. I mean, yeah. The thing is, I'm so used to Spotify now, like being able to download all the songs that I want and put them into my own playlist. I don't understand why I'd want to listen to radio anymore.
Well, you know, the funny thing is the radio industry still really doesn't like Pandora and Spotify, even though this is how people discover songs.
Right.
And if you're going to buy music, that's how you're going to do it. You're going to listen first on YouTube, maybe, or RDO or Spotify or Pandora. Mm-hmm. Andy?
It's weird that we've been following this rumor for like at least 4 years now. We still don't really know what Apple is going to do with a streaming radio service, because there's so many different ways you can interpret the term streaming radio. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they decided to update the podcast app and put radio into a more prominent position. Is it going to be a sort of thing where there's sort of a curated playlist of apps that you can recommend to people? Or is it going to be as simple as I've got my usual playlist of peaceful music, and I want to share it to anybody who wants to use it. Will they then be able to listen to this music just by virtue of the fact that I've shared it? So it's cool that they're offering a different music product, certainly one that allows people to listen to music without buying it, which is exactly where people want to go with their music right now. But we just have no idea what product they're actually building out of this.
Meanwhile, I'm seeing stories in places like the LA Times and Hollywood Reporter saying Apple's losing the pro community down in Hollywood, that people are going back to Avid.
Yeah, they don't care.
Apple doesn't care.
I mean, they're going to do some PR. I mean, NAB is next week, so that's the...
That will be where we'll see, right?
I don't know if they're doing anything publicly. They might be doing something at the Final Cut User Group, the big super meet, but the I don't think that Apple... The problem is that the market is, you know, the high-end market is contracting and the corporate and education market is expanding. And it is a perfect app for corporate and education and a relatively good app for other production. It may not be the perfect app. I mean, I just finished editing all I use is Final Cut 10. So, I mean,
get ready.
So I'll say that. I mean,
get ready, because Apple's going to launch, coinciding with the NAB show, a big advertising campaign. Aimed at professional users to get him back on Final Cut.
Well, what I'll say is that it's...
You use 10.
That's all I use. I won't go back.
But there are a lot of people who...
I mean, I just...
It doesn't support tape. It doesn't... I mean, there's
who
things
cares?
That... Well, there are a lot of people who use tape.
I know, but there's
tape.
A lot of people... Here's the thing, though, is that Apple's looking at the future of the market, not the past of the market.
And obviously,
so the past
of
the market
of
is
money.
Tape, and it's all this other stuff. But, I mean, you know, I haven't used tape in 10 years, you know. And the thing is we do a lot of production. I mean, it's not like we do a little bit of production here and there.
Right.
And, you know, all of our, you know, our whole backbone is all Final Cut 10 at this point. Our guys won't look back. It did take a lot of work to get used to what you have to do. And there's still things that I go, oh, I wish I was just using an Avid or Final Cut 7 for a handful of little things, but there are so many things that you do so much faster. And the big thing is that the conversion rate from when you're looking at people doing education corporate, which is, you know, like 15 to 20 times the size of film, the film market, times, not percentage, times as much as the film market. You know, the thing is that the film market is fine. And I think Apple obviously doesn't want to lose that, because it's a good, you know, it's the good shiny version of what everyone looks up for from a thought leadership perspective. But from a pure financial perspective, I think that
you know, where Apple has focused is all these people have, you know, come with iMovie, comes on all their machines, they all start to learn it, and then they run into a wall in iMovie that says, I can't move forward. And then they, then Final Cut 10 is the easiest thing for them to move forward to, you know, if they haven't done anything before. I do think that Apple's biggest mistake was, is they should have just, the biggest mistake they made is they should have just made this some other Final Cut or some other thing and let it kind of grow in rather than just force everybody into that box all at one time. I think that's what got them into a lot of trouble. But I think that the app for many, many, I'd say probably 80 to 90% of the people who are doing editing, and, you know, when we say that, you know, the people in Hollywood are 2% of people doing editing, but for 80 to 90% of the people doing editing, it's probably, plenty. It's an incredible app. And I think that there are other folks, I mean, I know that my other company, they use mostly Premiere because Rebel Unit uses mostly Premiere because it's a it integrates with After Effects really well. So that's, you know, so it's not
they're
like
they're an Adobe shop basically.
Yeah, so they're an Adobe shop, and that makes a lot of sense because the integration of the Adobe products are so good. And then when we're looking at some of the film projects we're working on, we're probably going to be using Avid. So the big thing is that you really can use a lot of these different tools. You know,
and Avids are on Macs, but I don't think they sell a lot of Apple hardware.
Oh, they don't sell Apple hardware, but I mean, Avid does. I mean,
it's
if you're
a
doing
Mac
a big
tool.
It's a Mac tool, and it's
kind of heavily customized hardware.
Well, no. Avid now just runs on your. You
it
can
just runs on a regular
laptop.
Rack.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. Wow. And it's great when you're especially. I mean, there's just things that Avid does well that you can't
but it's
do
a
anywhere else.
It's a prestige so it's, issue, isn't it? I mean, the idea that like a 2003, you know, Cold Mountain.
Oh yeah.
You know, edited on Final Cut, huge deal. Walter right. Murch, you know, legendary editor.
Yep. No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that
so
was...
Does Apple want to keep that, you know, cachet?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think, and I think that's what the ad campaign is going to be pushing towards that. I think that, although at NAB, really what you're pushing towards is the broadcast community. I mean, I can say as someone who has to do things quickly, you know, I have to slam a lot of video together quickly. For a fast edit, there is nothing I would rather use than Final Cut. You know, for I want to put up 5 minutes quickly. So if you're doing a segment for TV, for instance, if I'm a reporter and I'm out shooting in Afghanistan or something, I want to cut that quickly and put it and clean it up and put it up so that it can be used in a newsreel. There's nothing I'd rather be in the field with than Final Cut 10.
And Apple may get the last laugh as the world moves towards.
Well, I don't know what the numbers are, but the rumors are is they've sold more Final Cut of Final Cut 10 than they've sold of any other version of Final Cut. In fact, I think the rumor is they've sold more than all of the Final Cut.
It's a lot cheaper.
It's one reason. It's a lot cheaper.
I think a lot of people who are put off by $1,200 say, $300, I'll do it.
And in 2 years, we've seen, I think, 6 or 7 updates.
Right.
You know, and not like bug fixes. I mean, like key features being added.
Right.
And
they're adding those features back in.
One thing that's really interesting is that we've had all those updates, and we haven't seen any, you know, as a user, I'm not paying for an update.
Right.
It's an interesting business model. I think that, I know that I'm not the normal person in this conversation as far as talking about Final Cut 10 because it's fashionable to bash on it. But you're
cutting edge in a way that a lot of traditional studios.
I mean, I had to relearn everything I thought about editing. I mean, how, you know, building compound, you know, the way I build, the way I compound stuff, the way I put it together. I mean, it's, and I'm still learning it all. And we have the advantage that because Mark Spencer and Steve Martin, you know, do Mac Break Video, you know, and talk about
they
it, we get
stuff.
These over here, and they, and so we have the advantage that we were able to learn it very quickly too. So I think that that's the other advantage.
Wall Street Journal says Apple will begin iPhone production. Well, this quarter, but what is this quarter? That's like we just started this quarter.
Yeah,
so we're talking before June 31st. Big deal.
Yep.
Okay. That means what? An announcement when, Renee Ritchie?
I heard August, but other people have heard July. So somewhere in that time frame.
So if they start production end of June, when do they start shipping? How long does it take? I guess it's different than every year. It's a different number, right?
Well, it's a 5S, and that's usually faster than a new model.
They've already made this thing.
Yeah, and they want to have as many of them as possible because they otherwise run out, and they want to sell them to everybody.
They don't want those shortages anymore.
No, they don't.
And they haven't really been able to lick that one.
No, because the demand keeps growing, and they keep increasing supply, and it's been hard for them to catch up.
Are they making two iPhones, a 5S and some sort of inexpensive plastic version?
They have been working on an inexpensive version for a couple of years, and they have always chosen previously to just you know, keep the older version over at a lower price point.
Right.
But eventually, if they get big contracts like China Mobile or Indian contracts, they'll need one that is actually cheaper to produce. And their second problem is that if an iPhone 5 goes to $100 and next year it goes down to zero, that's really good hardware, and people might buy that in lieu of an iPhone 5S or an iPhone 6, and that reduces the average selling price of the iPhone, which makes Wall Street cranky. So they might want to have a cheaper model at the low end so that people who are on the fence decide, no, I want the premium iPhone.
Or they could just make it country exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just went to my AT&T page to see if the HTC One ordering was available yet, and the big splash page, iPhone 4, 99 cents.
Yeah.
That's you know, that's the way they solve it.
In the United States, you really can't convince someone to buy a cheap plastic phone when there's already a cheap, really wonderful phone.
Free iPhone. Come on.
Yeah, so long as it still remains compatible with iOS 6 and then iOS 7, right. I don't see that there's a reason for that to exist in the United States.
Well, I mean, I could maybe make a case that it could exist on T-Mobile with their new pricing plans to take it for $99 and walk away and not have carriers. A
But would it be within Apple's best interest to make that offer available?
Oh, well, maybe not.
T-Mobile say they'll have the iPhone in April or whatever? Yeah.
It's happening.
It's not outlandish. Almost all of Apple's products, not all, but a lot of them have the lower-end colored version and the high-end black and white premium version. Right. It's a model that Apple knows, and it's a model that they can... If an iPhone, the other problem with the iPhone 5 is it's been really expensive and really hard to produce. And that's been part of the problem. And we don't know how expensive or hard to produce future generation iPhones will be. So to have a cheaper, easily produced one to fill that niche in the market could be interesting either way.
iPhone 5 coming to T-Mobile April 12th. And they'll have that, you know, month to month plan. But they don't say how much it will be. One of the things they're doing is you're still paying. You pay $20 a month. So you get a subsidized price.
For 2 years.
And for 2 years, you have to pay $20 a month. So it's the same price, basically, right?
Right. Although after 2 years, you don't have to pay.
You own the phone.
My wife's phone, she's had an iPhone 4 for 2.5 years. And, you know, she's not paying any less now that her subsidy is done. She's just giving that money to AT&T.
Right.
T-Mobile's plan is a little bit different. But T-Mobile, you know, theoretically, and to Andy's point, who knows whether Apple would want this or not. But T-Mobile could theoretically say, or you can just buy this low-cost iPhone for $99 and, you know, and it's super cheap, or you just walk away with it. That you know, might appeal to somebody. It's certainly more relevant in markets like China and especially India, where I know that the iPhone is rapidly growing now that it's officially available and not just a gray market phone in India.
Yeah. Because overseas, there is a really significant premium for buying an iPhone over almost any other Android device.
It's a status symbol.
A lot of people would much rather have the equivalent of $80 in their pocket rather than a logo. They can buy a logo in a flea market and stick it on there, and they certainly do that. I really don't know that Apple would want to. I think that if they played that game in the United States, if they gave someone the Americans the option of you can either for $99 you can have a lockdown iPhone 4 that you can only use with the carrier you buy it with and you're committed to that carrier for 2 years, or for $99 we can give you a cheap, disgusting plastic. It's a little bit sticky on the front, but it's $99 and you own it forever and you can take wherever we want. I think a crazy, stupid number of people would say $99 and I own it forever. Okay, good. It's sticky. We'll wipe it off. It's plastic. Who cares about plastic?
In the U.S., our view of phone prices is so distorted because of those subsidies that what we're talking about is phones that are below the waterline in the U.S. We're literally talking about phones that would pay you to take them in the U.S. So there's really no price lower than zero, which is the iPhone 4. But overseas, they don't have those models, and those phones that we view as essentially free are too expensive. So they have to come up with phones that are cheaper that we don't even see in the U.S. because of the subsidy model. So, you know, it is hard for us as Americans to look at this, or North Americans, sorry, Renee, to look at this and not think of that that model. And yet beneath the waterline in the rest of the world, you know, there's a whole question about how do you stay competitive.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. We're having a lot of fun. Andy Iannacco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times, from IDG, editorial director at Macworld and PC World. Mr. Jason Snell, great to have you again. You were great on Twitter a couple of weeks ago.
Thanks.
People should go back and watch that one. Really fun. A rare appearance, not so rare really these days, from Alex Lindsay of Pixel Core. Anything you want to plug, Alex? Anything at all? You just show up. You're here. You've got nothing to sell. Just, what kind of weirdo are you?
I'm just having fun.
All right. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. We want to talk a little bit today about Audible.com. What a great place for audiobooks. Over 100,000 books in every category, fiction, nonfiction. I'm looking at my library, my Audible library here, and it's just this because I've been a member since 2000. It's now, I don't know, 390. I can't remember what it was. Maybe I think it's over 500 books. Classics. I just finished Pete Townsend's Who I Am autobiography. No Easy Day, the story of the SEAL Team 6 that went in and got Osama bin Laden. If you read, if you saw Zero Dark Thirty, this right. is the kind of one of the source material for it. And it's yep. really, really great. So many. I mean, I just look at all these great books. Ready Player One, Will Wheaton, reading that great book. Of course, we all watch Game of Thrones on Sunday night.
Oh, yes.
This book three, Storm of Swords, but you got to start with the first one and work your way through them. Actually, we've got a special deal for you. And to get us started, I'm going to let Annie Inako make his recommendation because it turns out it's the same as the special deal. Go ahead. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I swear to God, there was no collusion. We stayed in separate hotels. We had different coaches.
He's been in a soundproof booth since last week.
Exactly. This is a really cool book called Dimension of Miracles with two names that are going to be attached to it that will get a lot of people interested immediately. Number one, it's part of Neil Gaiman's little imprint, where Neil Gaiman Presents, where he picks books that are out of print or not really well known and really puts them in front of Audible to say, please make this into an audiobook. And so because it's a cool book, more people would want to be interested in it. So it does have the Neil Gaiman stamp of approval, and it is read by John Hodgman.
Oh,
who is just remarkable. This is the first book outside of his about his areas of expertise and other books like that. This is the first fiction book that I've heard him read, and he is so good at this because he has that rare knack of as a book reader to handle scenes with four characters going on, including one being a robot and two being aliens, and make each voice distinct without doing character voices. It's all about the reading and it's all about the meaning and the meter of the lines. It's just wonderful. Definitely a stuck in the driveway trying to get to the end of chapter 5 because I want to find out what happens at the end of it. And it's a great book too. Gaiman introduces the book and tells the story about how it was one of his favorite books, and when he met and became friends with Douglas Adams, he assumed that Douglas Adams must have read this book because it is so close in tone to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And he tells a story about how Douglas was absolutely shocked that essentially someone had written the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy about 10 years before he'd gotten to that subject. Funny stuff. And it's also a great pick for people who are not terribly fond of science fiction, because the problem that a lot of people associate with science fiction is, Instead of a line in the book saying the two people traveled from Earth to Proxima Centauri, the trip took 236 days, and by the time they got there, they were itching for a fight, which is the way a normal book goes. Stereotypically, bad science fiction will spend 8 chapters describing the light drive that got them there in 233 days, the changes it made on society when this light drive was invented, when really all we want to know is people went from point A to point B. So this is really a very I'm only on chapter 6 right now, and it's a very straightforward story in which really every moment of this simple story so far is savored and explored extremely well. It's an extremely satisfying book, and again, only 6 chapters in, and it's already probably one of my 10 to 15 favorite audiobooks ever.
Well, to celebrate this, Audible is having a sweepstakes, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but let me just tell you, the name of the book is Dimension of Miracles. Single.
Probably should mention it was written by Robert Sheckley.
Robert Sheckley. John Hodgman narrates it. You can get it for free. All you have to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak and sign up for the gold account, and that book is yours free. Actually, your first month's free. Your first book is free. Cancel at any time in that first month and pay nothing, but it's yours to keep no matter what. Now, let me tell you about the sweepstakes, because this is exciting. A free trip to New York Comic Con coming up in October. It'll be a trip for two to New York City.
Honeymooners alert.
Honeymooners alert. That's what a good honeymoon if you're a comic book fan or a, I don't know, a True Blood fan or any, including round trip airfare, 4-night stay, and 2 4-day passes to the New York Comic Con. It's coming October 2013. You don't have to be an Audible member. Just go to audible.com/sweeps and put in your email for a chance to win now through April 12th. That's it. audible.com/sweeps. And you have till April 12th to do that. All you have to do is enter your email address and you're entered to win. Good luck. Good luck. That's going to be a great Comic-Con. Do you go to that? You go to the... You'll go to the New York one for sure, right?
I go to New York Comic Con every year, and it's great because you want a huge convention where there's lots of things going on, and you have a good chance of meeting the sort of writers and artists that you really want to say hi to and give some money to, and say, "Oh my God, you're working before Washington was kind of awesome, and can I buy your sketchbook for $10?" But without like the really crazy, stupid, insane crowds of San Diego. Also, it's in New York City, so there's places to go and things to do outside of the place. I had only marginal interest after how big San Diego got, and now it's like all my large convention needs are being served quite nicely at New York Comic Con.
Can't wait. audible.com/sweeps to enter to win, and while you're there, celebrate the release of Dimension of Miracles. Sign up for your Audible account, audible.com/MacBreak. They go together perfectly. I can't wait to listen to this one. Gosh, I'm getting behind on Audible. I have to drive around more. In the car, at work, at play, while you're working out. It's great. audible.com/MacBreak. Second quarter financial results for Apple come out. I can't believe this comes so fast. Mm-hmm. They're coming out in 2 weeks, maybe three. Make it 3 weeks. April 23rd, Tuesday. As always, right after Mac Break. They do this on purpose.
Yes. Everything Apple does is to foil us.
Yes.
Yes.
So we don't know what they're going to announce. They don't announce products at this quarter.
No, this is all about their financials. Money. And everybody makes beautiful charts. And Tim gets on the phone and says, "This is Tim.
Do you listen in on these calls?"
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We do a live blog about this on Macworld. It's you know... They drop hints. This is the most disclosure Apple ever gives you about their business. Right. They'll do an occasional slide in a presentation, but here is where they're mandated, because they're a public company. They have to disclose, and they set the rules of what they disclose, but they do have to disclose this stuff, and they do say things. I mean, the analysts get on there, and they're like, "Are you really going to announce a product? What is it? Tell us about it." They're like,
"Where's my TV?
No, we're not going to do that.
Where's my Mac Pro?"
Yes, Gene Munster, do you have a question? Where's my TV? Exactly right.
No, you have to go with things like, "Do you see any opportunities in perhaps the arm, lower arm above the hand, but exactly. lower than the elbow area development?
Can you give me some color around your feelings about the wrist?" so they do a lot of that. But the fact is, Apple will, they'll make statements in there. Tim Cook usually will make a statement, and Steve Jobs before him did this, where they'll say some things that are like head fakes. They'll throw some elbows at the competition. The right. iPad was essentially announced on one of these. In that, people asked him about netbooks, and they said, "We think netbooks are a bad experience. We think we have a better idea." And then they wouldn't. That was all they said.
You read the
right?
tea leaves, though. So, you knew there was something.
So, you know, they do use it, and there is information in it. It's just not the information that the analysts are looking for, which is pre-announcement of new products. That doesn't happen. But you can still – there's great stuff in there. We run a – you know, we transcribe what Tim Cook says and run an article on Macworld about right. it. That's actually great, because, you know, that's a very rare thing to get a statement like that. And, you know, they're doing it very carefully, but, you know, they are disclosing some tactical information on those things. So it's worth a listen.
Tim Cook,
and anyone can listen. You don't yeah. have to follow the
oh,
live
you can.
Blog. There's a QuickTime. If you go to apple.com/investor, there's a QuickTime link that goes live, and you can stream it live when they do it. So you can spend your afternoon listening to analysts try to get information out of Apple, and Apple say no.
We're going to trick them this time.
Realize, though, that there's like sort of like an 8-to-1 ratio of for every one. We believe that micro wearable technology has not been done well yet. However, we have an area for every one of those. There's like, well, by amortizing our purchase of raw aluminum across yes. two companies in Cork, Ireland, we were able to defer that pre-tax. Right down to like, oh man,
there's a lot of that. There's
a, about the TV.
There's yeah. a lot of talk about revenue per user or revenue per unit or the supply chain management that's a snooze. But there's gems in there too.
Yeah, like the first when they were talking about the first sales first call after the Kindle Fire came out. And they're taught now that that's when they first start talking openly about here is what the 7-inch tablet is doing. Right. Here's also here's what the 7-inch iPad is doing to sales of the main iPad. These are normally someone has to go on Charlie Rose or better to get information like that.
Is there more technical discussion now that Tim Cook is doing them than when Steve Jobs was doing them? Talking about the back channels and how they're organizing that, because that was really his specialty.
It's actually pretty much the same, because Jobs was never never running it, right? He would make appearances.
Tim used to run it, didn't
Tim
he?
Always has run those calls, and he still does with Oppenheimer, the CFO. And Jobs would just parachute in and read a statement, and
I'd
occasionally
like to say something about
kick, yeah, and then he would occasionally kick displays. Over some trash cans and say, "Oh, and the Android thing is terrible." He would do that, and then he'd go. He'd be like, "Jobs out," and he'd
I'm
be gone. And Tim Cook would take it back
the
over. So,
how do you think the structure of that works? Are they all in their offices, like on a conference phone?
I think
they're not
that's
in one
it.
Big room.
No, I think they're in one big room with a conference phone. And
so
got
when Jobs parachuted in, he would like. Come into the room, barge into the room, said, "Let me interrupt here."
No, I think he would.
I'm going to give you a chance in a moment, but first, I want to tell you.
Yeah, I think he was there the whole time, but they knew it was dramatic, so they'd be like, "But before we get started, we have a special statement," and then Steve Jobs would
appear.
And
no one knows.
That's right, because you know, it's audio
Jobs
only.
App. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. Drop the mic and walk away. Let him talk about the supply chain all he likes.
One thing they almost certainly won't be announcing is a game controller. This is the worst rumor I ever read. And it's, this is from Pocket Gamer. They said, well, you know what, GDC, Apple's been meeting. This must be an April Fool's joke that came out early.
I hope
Apple's
so.
Meeting with developers discussing an Apple game, second screen game controller. Looks a lot like a Nintendo DS from 20
years. It's crazy.
Jim Dalrymple.
They have a game controller. It's their iOS devices, are game controllers.
Right. That's it.
And they have a second screen. Amazing.
Jim Dalrymple's response.
Nope.
Yeah, you go to the Apple TV product page, and like it's almost like I think it's like the third item down where they're saying here's how the Apple TV enhances gaming by turning the iPad into a second screen for the game experience. So people who are interested in exploring those rumors, I'll give you the top secret website. It's apple.com/Apple TV. Don't pass it out, because we don't want the server to go down. They'll pull it as soon as they know this gun public.
it was such a dumb rumor that I read the headline and didn't even read the article. It's like,
Jim probably had a bunch of other words. He just wasn't allowed to print them.
Nope is a good one. I like nope. Ain't gonna happen. Let's see what else is going on in the world of Apple. There's lawsuits galore. I don't like talking about lawsuits. I guess we could say, and this isn't over yet, that Apple was denied the trademark to iPad Mini because it was generic.
Right. That was a rush to judgment. It's just asking them for more information, right?
Right. And I think that there will be continued.
You know, I love it when there are legal stories by non-legal people, and then Nilay Patel from The Verge gets on Twitter and says, "Incompetent! You don't know what you're talking about."
That word does not mean what you think it means. Yeah,
he actually went to law school.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's great because that when they write pieces like that, it gives you an education on how complicated this stuff is. Mostly from my reading of this sort of stuff that I found online, Nilay's piece included, is that mostly it's because we can't give you a trademark that makes it seem as though you own the term mini. You have to be so specific that this applies only to your product and doesn't prevent anybody else from using the sequence of four letters.
So they just rewrite it.
On that basis, it says, well, how did Apple lose the mini trademark? Oh, okay, because it's Jeopardy rules. They didn't phrase it in the form of a trademark. I'm sorry. Not a match. The board goes back.
Sorry.
In-app,
Intel, you still control the board.
In-app purchases, according to a Distimo, I don't know how they know, are 76% of App Store revenue as of February 2013. Does that seem right? I don't know. Who is Distimo? There's some company that does this.
But there's a whole lot of free-to-play stuff happening out there now. Yeah. And I mean, I just got...
Almost everything is.
I just got Super Stickman 2, which it's not free-to-play. Super Stickman Golf 2, great game. But it's like $2 or something like that. But Rob Griffiths, who used to work for Macworld, did the calculation, and it's something like if you want to unlock everything via in-app purchase, it's like thousands of dollars. It's crazy. And it's a little too much.
Now. That's premium
and paymium. Yeah.
Paymium. But Lauren Brichter's letter press, which is very playable for free, but you pay $1.99, you get a few extra things. That's a model that almost everybody's following.
I don't have a problem with free to play or paymium, if we want to call it that. My problem is if I'm a I love the game, and I just want to get it. The problem with Super Stickman Golf 2 is there's no price at which I can buy the game.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Let me pay 10 or 20 bucks and just have the game, because it's a really fun game. Did I mention that it's a really
fun
game?
Is it playable without paying?
And it is playable. You just have to grind, and you have to do levels again and again and go around finding the little bucks that you have to redeem, or you can just buy some. But and that's okay if you want to do that, but can I just say, okay, I love your game. Just 10 bucks. Give it all to me. But in that game, you can't.
The problem is that when the App Store launched, there was stuff like $10 Super Monkey Ball, but there was no demos and no refunds.
Right.
And we as users told developers that we're risk adverse. We're not going to buy your $10 game under those conditions. So then they raced to the bottom and they were given in-app purchases. And we said, we won't pay for extra levels. We won't pay to remove ads. What we will pay for is, because we're impatient and we are egotistical. So I will give you, I will not give you a dollar for your game, but I will give you $99 for Smurfberry so my hut looks better than Jason's.
Ladies and gentlemen, the human being.
what I really want to see is, I love it. I think I'm onto something when I see a game where there is a freemium version, but there is also a $9.99 buys it for real, because that tells me that this game was built the way it was supposed to be built, as opposed to we're going to tinker with the game mechanics to make sure that as soon as you're in sort of a mental fugue, we're going to drive you into a state in which your brain is going to be down about 80 IQ points, and that's when we're going to hit you for an upgrade that you absolutely need to have in order to keep this game running. Because when they start tinkering with the game mechanics that way, every single game I've ever played that seemed to be built that way was never satisfying for more than 30 minutes. I really want the shut up and take my money level of a game where I want to play it for free just to see, okay, the controls are easy to understand. I've just like on a Kindle book, where if the first chapter is good enough to make you want to buy the rest of the book, then that free portion of it really did its job. If it really is just there to make sure that, now, do you really want to hear? It looks like there's an action scene coming up. If you want 99 cents, we will actually give you the action scene instead of just telling you what it is and then moving on to the next chapter.
I got a chance to speak to a lot of developers at GDC, and this was the question I asked every one of them. And for example, FireMint, which became FireMonkey, which is now owned by EA, they did Real Racing 3. And the first two you could just buy, but the new version is free to play, and it was hugely controversial. And a lot of them will tell you that they just can't make money on the App Store, and they can't make the kind of games that they want to make. We can't buy the kind of games we want to buy, because we, as much as, you know, Jason or Andy or I would pay 10 bucks or 20 bucks for a great game, the App Store will not. They have said flat out, under the current conditions, the current rules of the App Store, they won't pay it, which means the developers can't feed their kids, they can't make great games, and it's a bad problem. I would love to see demos, I would love to see refunds, I'd love to see a premium, you know, a Craig Hockenberry premium App Store, so they didn't have to, so that EA games didn't have to sit on the shelf with free games from everybody else. I'd love to see a lot of solutions to that, but right now we have an environment created by us, by Apple, and by developers that's pleasing nobody.
I don't know. I mean, here, I'm very pleased with Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, the new one's coming out any minute now.
Oh, I can't
wait. Away
Zombie
the,
lover.
Can't wait.
Like, zombie lover.
So this report gave us some interesting numbers that might confirm or tell you why Super Stickman Golf does what it does. They call it average revenue per download. So the free apps that offer in-app purchases, average revenue per download is about 93 cents. Mm-hmm. Apps that you buy, the average revenue is $2.25. Apps like Super Stickman Golf, where you buy it and you pay the most, $2.40.
Right. Well, I mean,
so that's how you make the most money.
You're reaching a paying audience. I mean, it is kind of brilliant. So
yeah, they're already
audience,
giving you money.
They're not looking for something
they're
free.
They're invested.
They'll give you a couple bucks, and then you
and
crank
more,
up
more,
the
grind
wheel.
More.
And,
once you got a sucker, you got to play him.
You know, I think it's fine. I want that out. I want that
I
thing that
you.
Says, I'm all in on this game. I love it. I just want everything. And Super Stickman 1 did it, and Super Stickman 2 doesn't have it. You just can keep on spending thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
But doesn't there come a time when you just feel like a sucker, where you feel as though the whole point is to not give you value that they're promising you to, and that they're just trying to keep holding you by the ankles and shaking you and shaking you and shaking you upside down and continuing to just get quarters out of your pocket?
Yeah. Well, Electronic Arts has got a ton of my money from the Simpsons donut purchases, but I hate them. So they got my money, but I hate them. Which is, you know, are they happy?
Right.
Maybe they are.
There are games that are run like casinos where you literally can't win anything, but you can keep buying in-game currency and spend it. Yeah. And I think we talked about this on a past show where they literally employ psychologists the same way casinos do to figure out how they can shake, like Andy said, every penny out of your pockets. Yeah. Those using the rules of the App Store right now make the most money and are in the top grossing charts.
Yeah. Oh, but again, that's what offends me. The idea that they want to maneuver you into a position where your higher brain... I'm not joking about this. It really is a science where they figure out, here's how to maneuver this person to a position where their impulse control level is very, very low. Their higher cognitive functions are very, very low. They're in sort of a fugue state where all they want to do is keep the shiny things coming so much more. And if there's this big, an immense orange button they can press to keep that happy chemical in their brain going, they're going to press it. That's when you feel manipulated like a sucker.
I should apologize to the Super Stickman Golf people. Rob Griffith's calculation is, it's not thousands of dollars. To reach level 60, you have to spend more than $160, play 2,000 rounds of golf, or win over 8,000 head-to-head matches. So really simple child's play.
If you won 8,000 head-to-head matches, you wouldn't have paid a penny.
Right. So you can, if you play it all your entire life.
I'm not down with that program.
But $160, right? It's like, you know, if I'm your faithful user.
Well, you don't actually. No, but again, I have to interject and point this out. That's $160,000?
$160.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Because $160,000 happened to be the exact dollar amount of the wager at the end of Caddyshack.
That's 1,000 level 60 golfers in Super Stickman Golf equivalent.
Well, I think it gets back to the seriousness of the game player. I mean, I think I don't want anything, and I admit I'm only one segment of it, but I don't want anything more complicated than Field Runners, Angry Birds, and Plants vs. Zombies.
Like, and those all three, of those don't have in-app.
And they charge me 99 cents or $1.99.
Well, Angry Birds has the Angry Eagle. Do you ever buy that?
No.
Yeah, but those are like the top five games. Those are all wildly successful. Right. And the thing is, what about the rest of them?
But the thing is, it's to look at, you know, they have a very good model that other people can, I think other people can employ, you know, in that it's simple enough that, you know, what they do very, very well is, I was just teaching my 5-year-old son how to play Plants vs. Zombies this morning.
You taught me how to play Field Runners. I'm king of intestines.
Yes, I am. So anyway,
he's very good. If you ever want a strategy, get this guy. Plants vs. Zombies is so good.
But yeah, and the thing is what all three of those do really well is, A, they're compelling. The music's good. The art is simple but good.
Right.
They are easy to get started, but very, very hard to master. And they do that transition from easy to hard very, very well.
That's where good game design.
You win. And then after the third or fourth level, it's getting a little harder. But it's very, very, very good level design. And it's funny. You know, they're all funny. Well, I don't know. Field Runners is funny, but it's. It is. That's, I mean, funny. And it's gotten in Field Runner 2 is a lot better.
Plants is the best iOS game ever.
But they're also older games. Yeah. I mean, they weren't produced.
It wasn't made for iOS. That's right. It was a Flash game at first. Yeah.
And it's just, the thing is that, for instance, what Angry Birds has done is they haven't necessarily capitalized on in-app purchases. What they do is they put out new ones, and we happily buy them. You know, it's like, ooh, there's the Seasons. Right. I'll pay another 99 cents for that.
Seasons was free at first.
Well, Seasons free, but I think it's now charged.
And there's Star Wars.
And then they make a lot of money. When you have that big, large of an audience, you make a lot of money on
merchandising,
shirts. And
how many T-shirts? How many Angry Birds T-shirts do you see on kids these days?
My son has two or three.
Yeah.
The Roku 3 has Angry Birds Star Wars on it.
I mean,
it's gotten a little bit crazy.
Well, and now they're doing shows. Have you seen the shows are actually pretty good. Have you seen the YouTube?
Really?
No. So here's the whole thing with Angry Birds now is that they have moved to, there's now in-app movie, like little shorts, like they want to be the Warner Brothers of Warner Brothers cartoons
of,
you know,
birds Looney Tunes. Being
of
shot birds. At pigs.
No Looney Tunes, but they're putting the Looney Tunes into the apps so you can actually watch these movies, you know, and they're building, you know, so they're, you know, they're using an already
are
built
they cut
in audience
scenes? How do they do that?
No, they're shorts. I mean they put some money into these. I mean these are not like,
so if you like conquer a level you get to watch a short, or
well when you open them up they play.
Yeah,
you know, in the new version I think when they open up and you play, and they're actually funny. I mean they're really well done. And so but they're, you know, moving towards, you know, capitalizing on this. But I think that you know, again, it is going to be, it's always going to be the handful of people that are making a lot of money and a lot of people that aren't making money. That's called, you know, I mean, like, there's a lot of actors in Hollywood that are, that right. never do more than wait tables. I mean, that's 90% of the actors in Hollywood, right? And so
so you got Jason playing Super Stickman Golf. I'm doing The Simpsons Tapped Out.
We're just playing.
Continue on.
We're playing,
yeah. I had to harvest some.
There's always going to be a small percentage that make a whole lot of money, and everyone else that keeps on trying. But I think that when we look at the model of those super successful games, they're inexpensive, they're easy to get started, but they keep on challenging you.
You know what scares me is that it's hard to do good game design.
It is,
and there's not really a manual for that.
Yeah,
it's not hard. These are the shorts. It's not hard to do psychologic tricks. Yes. Because it's pretty right. easy to trick people, you know, gambling and collecting loot in Diablo 3. That's well known. There is a manual for that, and it's kind of depressing that some of these games they focus more on how to trick you into spending money than on right. how to make a great game.
Right, and I feel like the game is being designed by someone with a business plan, not someone who
feels
loves building a great game.
And yep. Zynga's the classic, and that's actually, I think, hurt the company desperately because they invented this with Farmville,
and they
right?
felt malicious.
And it felt abusive. Okay. But I'm sorry, I have to buy some donuts here, so just continue on.
And you look at Candy Crush now. I mean, I know a lot of people who are just addicted to Candy Crush, and they'll get far enough that they're almost beating a level,
yeah.
and it's just 99 cents to get 5 more moves.
No.
And if they're spending more than a couple hours, they pay that 99 cents. And then,
right.
you know,
it's only a buck.
Mark my words, one yeah. of these days, somebody's going to come do one of those arcade game emulator apps where it takes real quarters. Yeah, and you'll have to buy
that's true. They invented it, didn't
for
they?
For a dollar with
your right.
purchases. And
how many
happen,
hours?
Because right? that's what it is. That's the, it
yeah,
is
no,
on your own
it.
Device.
They invented it.
It is a coin-op arcade game.
How many hours did I spend at Chuck E. Cheese, Pizza Time Theater?
How many dollars did you spend on log one quarters. Of Centipede?
$5 yeah. every Saturday.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
Is that all?
Was it $5 every Saturday? Well, that's what I had. I mean, I was 10 years old. So, but it was like $5 every Saturday. Yo.
If you're playing Dragon Slayer, you were just throwing your money away.
Mine was just, yeah, exactly. No, mine was Gauntlet.
That was a terrible
Gauntlet when I was in college.
It was on a laser disc.
It was Tempest.
If you've never seen like the final animation of Princess Daphne and you've never been 12 years old in your life, then you might think that was a waste of money. But I have seen that animation, Princess Daphne, and that was money well spent.
Tron.
Yeah. The Verge kind of tapped a vein when they said Apple's broken promise. Why doesn't iCloud just work? More and more developers are saying if you want to tie your sync services into iCloud, don't. You're nuts. It doesn't work. It's terrible. It's hard to use.
Yep.
Of course, everybody who uses iCloud as an end user is a little frustrated with it. Maybe not.
I'm not frustrated, but I have a very low expectation.
Low expectation.
I think that I don't do much with it.
What's the problem? You
know. I think this article isn't talking about the front-facing stuff.
No, it's about developers.
Right, there's two iClouds.
It's about core right. data sync.
Yeah.
There's two different kinds of iCloud user-facing iCloud like syncing. The document syncing works okay. Where you have a discrete document that has to be synced to the cloud and to multiple devices. The problem is that when you have databases, when you have complex data structures, because this is something I've been talking to developers about for 2 years now, they just can't get it to work. No matter what kind of app developer I'm talking to, whether using a large database or a small database, it doesn't work properly. It's not reliable. The service is not communicating with like the originating piece of software to say, hi, this failed, and here's the information you need to figure out why it failed. So you can either communicate that to the user or fix it yourself. Nope, it says, sorry, I tried. If you want to try it again and make your user wait another 8 minutes just to get this thing synced up, that's up to you. They're frustrated that Apple is not, they're not getting enough support from Apple on trying to get it to work. And the number of developers I've spoken to that have absolutely given up on trying to get iCloud to work with their apps, it's a long, long list. I'm probably not free to talk about all these different people, but many of them are actually so desperate have such a lack of faith in iCloud working anytime soon that they are actually contracting another developer to build them their own kind of iCloud syncing service because they feel as though this will be a service that works to our needs. It will actually work on time. It is because we're paying this guy to make it work. And more than anything else, they won't put one of the core features of their apps at the mercy of an Apple service that Apple might care about, might not care about. It's just a terrible, terrible situation. And I just have to underscore it. I've never seen a single problem with Apple that has gotten so many developers so absolutely honked off and frustrated and eager to say, let's try anything but the Apple solution now, because we have no faith that Apple's going to make this right.
There is a, I mean, to Andy's point, this is a very, very difficult solution, and it could be possible that the way Apple's doing it just won't work, that the strategy they took to do this. So you can sync key values over iCloud. That works fine. Tons of developers do that. Like Andy mentioned, you can sync
like
documents.
Sharing.
Yeah, and yeah, preference sharing. A lot of apps do that. You can also do the documents, but Core Data is trying to sync two Core Data databases. Apple doesn't do single store of truth the way Google does. I used to work in databases, so I have a very rough understanding of this. But with Google, you're basically getting a view into the single database that is the truth that lives on the cloud. Apple is doing peer-to-peer syncing. And the idea of taking a Core Data, which the developer can invent his own object model for his Core Data database, and syncing that to other devices when users may or may not be linked in, when they made, sorry, logged in, when they may or may not have made changes that result in collisions. You've got to have, you know, there's multiple transactions. It probably has to be very lockless. It probably has to be very optimistic, and you're going to run into tons of errors, and Apple's not feeding those errors back to developers, so they have no idea what's happening. But worse, the way that Apple architected this just simply might be unworkable, in which case you'll probably see a little dustpan at WWDC while they roll that away and try to fix it with a whole new system.
What developers are saying in this Verge article is one of the toughest parts, customers demand iCloud support after seeing Apple marketing, yet developers can't deliver. And I'm seeing this in the chat room. Agile Tortoise developer Greg Pierce said one key thing to understand is that the user's perception of iCloud functioning is largely based on apps that don't use Core Data.
Yeah.
So people say, well, in fact, the chat room is saying, oh, it's working for me. I like iCloud. What are you talking about? My calendar syncs fine.
Or it's the other services that Apple calls iCloud. There's a nice article on the Next Web that that Matthew Panzerino wrote called A Tale of Two iClouds, although it's funny, the URL is which iCloud actually sucks, but yeah,
right.
I guess that was his original headline. But the point is there are two iClouds. There's right. this developer data sync iCloud, and then there's the iCloud backups and calendar syncing and all these other things that are – it's like a brand name. And what the developers are saying is, okay, for this stuff where we need to sync data, like Rich Siegel from Barebones wrote a post about how he can't sync Yojimbo data, their right. contact manager or their
it's really a database.
Personal database, right?
Yeah.
Data syncing, it just doesn't work. And Brent Simmons wrote a piece about how even if you can get it to work, it only works on Mac apps that are in the Mac App Store and iOS apps.
Right.
So if you want to go to a web app or to Android phone or out of the App Store or to Windows, you can't use it there either. So, you know, Brent basically said don't use it at all. But there are these two iClouds, and there's, you know, that's part of the mess here is that Apple's just dropped yeah. all of its stuff into this one big box. And if part of it is broken or part of it works well, everybody expects the other part to work well because it's all just seen as one thing.
Well, it's also very limited. I mean, you end up with the situation where I've got a bunch of devices that are all, you know, 64 gig or, you know, or so, you know, and they're all trying to back up to it. And of course, you know, that filled up pretty quickly.
Well, there's a bandwidth yeah. issue, but I think
not a bandwidth. There's not enough room, but
right,
I can't buy the room
right.
to do it.
Right. And Renee hit the nail on the head where he said, really, the issue is this peer-to-peer syncing is just very, very tough to do. Ellis Hamburger writing in The Verge says, when Apple does use iCloud, it most often does not even use Core Data to sync information.
Yep.
Apps like Keynote, for instance, use the document-based syncing method. Keynote must work, so Apple keeps a close eye on document-based syncing. And when it does rely on Core Data, and this is the key, Apple's software has no more luck than third-party developers. So if it did work at all, you could point to Apple and say, well, look, see, it's working for Apple. It must just be you developers aren't good enough. No.
It's the same thing as game centers, that Apple doesn't dog food those APIs, which means that the developers are going to hit the pain points first.
Right.
And that's a horrible situation for everyone. If Apple...
Well, and they've set up this expectation.
Yeah. Trailers.app, I think, is the only one that uses this. And that's, you know, hardly essential to Apple.
Well,
so I think...
And as Ellis writes, periodically, Trailers loses track of user favorites because Core Data doesn't work.
Yeah.
Even for Apple.
You know, the Notes
did
app.
Did podcasts use it?
The Notes app
probably
uses
did.
IMAP.
That's probably what was wrong with podcasts. And I bet you the rewrite stopped using it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so many of these Notes app uses IMAP email instead of, I mean, it's just, it's, I think Renee hit it right on the head, which is there's a lot of stuff that we're seeing that, that Apple is not doing what it does for so many other things, which is take APIs and then, you know, the phrase is dog fooding. It's using it yourself, eat your own dog food. And Apple does that in so many other areas with APIs. And yet here, it doesn't seem like they did it because they rushed to get iCloud out, and it just doesn't work.
Well, and the thing is that
this stuff for developers
that syncing data between a bunch of mobile app, I mean, mobile devices that are all trying to use that data is a cluster. I mean, it is you know, it is it's not, you know, the reason that for a long time we couldn't get anything out of our you couldn't really have stuff with Google. Google was always, you know, it's always online. You're always connected. I mean, Drive is here now, but the main advantage of that is that there was one version of the truth. You know, and a lot of these online, you know, these truly cloud-based services, whether it's Salesforce or Google or many of the other ones, they truly are cloud. I mean, like when you're accessing that data, you're accessing one database. You're not downloading something, changing it, and uploading it. Because when you start doing that from six different devices, if we have an iPad, an iPhone, and my computer, and my, and, you know, somewhere else, and I'm logging in somewhere, you know, those are all, that creates just a, you know, a serious cluster.
And there's no incentive for developers to figure this out, because it really does look like Apple will probably just abandon ship at WWDC.
They're gonna, there's a really great tweet that I retweeted this morning about how, you know, how Apple has a session at WWDC where there's like a Apple engineers in the room with 1,000 developers asking questions. They would much rather have like 3 developers on stage talking to 1,000 Apple engineers to get some basic information to them about how well a lot of their services are working.
I think
that a lot of this is where you're seeing every philosophy has limitations. Nothing is perfect. And another problem of iCloud is that it really is users don't understand that this isn't Dropbox. This isn't like a network attached flash drive. This is personal sharing between the devices that you own. Anytime you need to get information in or out of that ecosystem towards other people, it starts to have problems. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm sort of moving away from using iCloud for my document syncing, because now there are just too many situations in which it's just too difficult for me to share this document with another person who needs to get access to it. And the other difficulty is that alternatives that a lot of developers would like to use, like Dropbox, small problem there, because Apple will not allow the application to simply access Dropbox without telling the user to please leave this application. I'm going to take you to the Dropbox application, where then you have to specifically authorize this transaction to happen and then come back to the original, which is not the easiest way to walk a user into an operation that, in theory, could be just as simple as, you want to use Dropbox? Great. You're using Dropbox. Go ahead.
Is this a Scott Forstall problem? Was this created by Scott and will be fixed by his successor?
No.
Will Eddie Q fix this? Yep.
The other thing to remember is that it's a cliche. It's a big cliche, but sync is hard. Sync is one of the hardest things to work on.
But
big
if data you had is asked hard. The world, is this a hard thing and is this the right way to implement it, people would have told you.
Well, so for
isn't
example,
it kind of arrogance to say, no, we're going to do something nobody's ever been able to do before?
If you talk to developers who use Dropbox, Dropbox is very good in North America. It's a huge pain outside North America because Amazon's data centers aren't as prolific there.
Interesting.
But they went through an incredibly tough time getting Dropbox Sync to work for a lot of apps, but they managed to do it, and that was the biggest difference. But multiple concurrent users on peer-to-peer devices, when, you know, maybe Alex is changing something on his iPhone while his wife is changing it on her iPad, or maybe he starts changing it, then logs in, then does it, or switches iCloud accounts, it's a nightmare. It probably is something Apple shouldn't have tried to do this way, and certainly shouldn't have released it when they did.
But mostly they overpromised and severely underdelivered. Yeah. That was the big problem. They should have, like, iPhone 1.0'd it, where they said, we're not going to give you everything that competing phones today give you, but the stuff that we're going to give you is going to be brilliant and going to make you wish that the next year's version came sooner. iCloud was wonderful demo given by Steve himself, saying it all just works, it's magic, and... There are two kinds of magic. There's the good kind of magic, and then there's the black hat magic. I think we're seeing black hat magic here.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room, Deep Pan, says maybe this is why Adobe's CTO was brought in to Apple. Hmm. Maybe he knows how the cloud works. Somebody must know.
Yeah, there's much more frightening versions of why you bring a CTO in from Adobe.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
You know, for Adobe.
For the YouTube videos, Alex, for the YouTube videos.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, so. You know, some of the iCloud, I actually would say, on balance, iCloud has worked better than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. I do use iCloud Backup, and it does work. And I've used it to restore and back up phones.
But that's a simple thing to do.
Right. And I some of these other iCloud features do work.
Yeah.
Well, it's simple, and yet Apple's track record was not that good with this stuff. See, and that stuff they seem to have gotten. It doesn't seem to be a lack of this seems to be like an API problem. And to Renee's point, it is really complicated. It is very hard to do, and they're struggling with it. Mm-hmm. And there's that overarching question of, is this something that developers even want? Because it is limited to App Store apps,
and
you can't go outside it. So I don't know. But you know, to give Apple credit, they'd never succeeded at something as big as iCloud before. And a lot of parts of iCloud actually do work. And I didn't expect the backup to be reliable. I didn't expect iTunes in the cloud to work.
It's faint praise, but it is better than Mobile Me.
It is. Yeah, they've shown some progression, but then they bit off this new chunk and have had a problem with it.
Right.
And to be fair, iCloud document syncing was so good that I really changed my entire writing workflow. I gave up Scrivener for like a year and a half because iCloud document syncing was such an interesting and useful thing.
What's his name? Stephen Lynch? Is that the Adobe CEO?
Kevin Lynch.
Kevin Lynch.
Okay. Why?
Well, no, I'm just saying that you know, a
conspiracy theory.
And I have no information at all. I'm just saying that when I saw that, I was like, well, Apple might be getting more serious about Photoshop.
It'd be the former Adobe CTO.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he shouldn't be able to talk about it or anything else. But I mean, when you're talking about some cloud services when it comes to imagery and so on and so forth, but also, and it may just be that he's just a smart guy and he just has a lot of. I mean, that could be all. But
talent is the scarcity in Silicon Valley. Yeah. And if there's somebody talented, you hire him.
And everybody who's been at Apple all this time, I mean, they've got so much stock. That I mean,
right. They don't care anymore.
Anybody who's senior at Apple could walk away if it's not a calling for them, it's right. just
right.
a job.
Right.
They're going to cash out, right. So it's a problem.
I'm ready to cash out. So the latest iPhone rumor comes from an unusual source: the San Francisco District Attorney. Apparently, he met with Apple over these phone thefts. A phone walks into a bar. You've heard the joke before. Mm. Apple hinted that the next two phones were designed under Steve Jobs.
Yeah, but of course, right?
But they're going to say that, right?
Well, no, but I mean, they said before that Steve Jobs had about 4 years of roadmaps, right. And the 5S is going to be like the 5, and it's not. If you talk to any company that makes products like the iPhone, they have a 2-year, 3-year roadmap, and yes, things will change, but the broad strokes are determined years in advance, and it would be shocking if Steve Jobs didn't have at least a hand in basic ideas for these phones stretching forward several years.
The DA said they discussed the long and laborious process of researching and producing a kill switch technology for devices, such as in Find My iPhone. He also said the next two generations of iPhones have already been developed. They preceded Tim Cook.
Developed is too hard a word, though.
Yeah, developed is a, yeah.
Yeah, is that a roadmap?
They're not finished, and they're going to respond to market conditions, and they'll make changes and alterations along the way.
Sometimes I don't think Apple pays attention to any of the market conditions. It just seems like they have a pipeline. They've decided where they're going, and I rarely feel like they're reacting to anything that we think that they would be reacting to.
My favorite tidbit from the story, George Gascon, the district attorney in San Francisco, said his conversation with Apple's government liaison, Michael Foulkes, was very underwhelming. He did most of the talking. It was incredible. He would just go on and on, one subject to the next. It was hard to follow. It was almost like somebody who's been trained in the art of doing a lot of talking and saying nothing. Sounds like this show. We're gonna take a break.
Professional witness.
Hey, we're right here, Leo.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. We're gonna take a break. Come back with your picks of the week. Oh, I did want to give a plug to Nolan Bushnell. We're gonna try to get him back on. He did a triangulation episode with us that was wonderful. Steve Jobs' first boss. He hired him at Atari. Had lots of things to say about Jobs in that interview. And he has a new book out. That refers to that. And what is the title of it? I'm trying to find it here. Finding the Next Steve Jobs, How to Find, Hire, Keep, and Nurture Creative Talent by Nolan Bushnell. And we will get him back on Triangulation to talk about that. His daughter emailed me, said Nolan would like to be on, and we will work it out. Meanwhile, our show today brought to you by our friends at Squarespace.com, the secret behind the best, most professional websites that never go down in the world. That's why I like Squarespace, because it's both incredible hosting plus the best content management system on top of it. They tie it together so smoothly, so beautifully, so seamlessly that you just get a great result from it. That's why we can't bring Squarespace sites down when we send you there. For instance, our blog, inside.twit.tv. Go ahead, try to hammer it down. And now, with a new commerce solution, Squarespace is a great way to sell online, too. Their e-commerce solution is integrated to work with every Squarespace template, meaning you can sell both physical and digital goods, music CDs or MP3s, hardcover books or e-books. It's very easy and quick. You'll have your merchant account set up instantaneously. You can accept payments right away, credit or debit. There's a single interface for order management. You can track orders. You can provide customer email updates, print shipping labels, add coupons. They do the taxes for you automatically, which is fantastic. And the best part, Squarespace Commerce is included with a business plan subscription starting at $24 a month with the annual plan, $30 a month, month to month. That is an amazing price for all of that. Squarespace does not take a cut of your transactions.
I every time, I know I'm old and I keep on repeating this, but every time you say that, I just, you know, we've been doing e-commerce since 2001, and I just always want to say, do you know what it used to take?
This is so easy. It's like pushing a button.
Yeah.
And with the business package, $24 a month, you get unlimited page, the same thing as the unlimited plan, unlimited pages, galleries, blogs, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. If you buy the annual plan, they will give you a custom domain name free and hook it all up for you. I can just go on and on and on. This is such a great deal. You get a free mobile website as well. It's part of the deal because their templates are mobile responsive. They work on every size screen, and that includes the e-commerce solution. Just fantastic. You got to try it. Squarespace.com. It's simple. There's a free 14-day trial. You don't even need a credit card or give them any personal information, just your email address. And if you decide to buy, we ask you to use our special code MacBreak4. We're in the fourth month, April. So it's MacBreak4. And you'll get 10% off your first purchase. That's why you should buy the annual plan to get the most savings. Squarespace.com. The new commerce is amazing. If you're looking to set up a site or maybe move your store to a much more robust platform, you got to try it. Squarespace.com. Use MacBreak4 to save money. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start with, you know, Alex, you haven't done an Alex pick in a long time. You know, one of those $700.
You know, I don't have one for today.
Yeah, $3,000 video hardware. Come on,
yeah,
Alex.
Come on, Alex.
I didn't know that the pressure was going to be on for this week.
I can give you an expensive one. Mine will be expensive.
Yeah, yours
will
be expensive. Mine's not.
All right.
Okay, so mine is something I actually ran into at Macworld when I was there, and it's called Jaxta. Jaxta. So what Jaxta does is it downloads videos from the web. I know that doesn't sound like much, but pretty much it downloads every video that you touch on the web. So,
whoa.
So
Like by visiting?
Yeah. So you go to YouTube, and so if I go to YouTube here and I go to a page, you'll just, you might hear it in the background here. So if I go to, I'll go to any video. Steve Jobs introduces the iPod 2001. That's on my playlist for whatever reason. So, so anyway, so I've gone to this video.
You're watching the fabulous advertisement. Ad. Right. I wish you could skip that.
Can you download the advertisement, too?
There was one.
That would be a great way to skip that.
There was one ad the other day that came on, and I actually stopped, and it was like a minute and a half, and I was watching it.
A minute and a half pre-roll is a little bit long.
No, but I couldn't stop because it was actually really good. Now I can't remember.
See, that's the key.
Yeah, exactly.
Get it good.
So if I go to Jaxta, you'll see that it's 128 megs, and it's downloading right now. It'll take 4 minutes for it to download across this network, and then it'll convert it to whatever format I'd like to convert it to.
Mm.
So it makes it so what happens is then this will work. Like for instance, there's a piece of hardware that we use, and they have all their web behind the developer or behind the user, wall. You know, the support, you know, you have to have a username and you have to have all this login stuff. And then you go to their videos and I have to log in every single time. So I just turned Jaxta on. And I just went and just clicked on all the videos that were locked in their webpage.
Wow.
And it just pulls them all down. And then you go to abc.com and just pulls all that down too. And then you go to, you know, then you go to lynda.com and it just pulls all that down too.
That's awesome.
So the thing is it's kind of this effortless way to, to anything that's unencrypted, you know, that doesn't have a, you know, that's there, which is most of the videos on the web because they want it to be easy to watch. It'll just grab for you. So it's like $20 or $30 or something like that, but it's worth It's worth every penny if you're if you need to get stuff down from the web. Jaksta.
J-A-K-K-S-T-A. S-T-A. Jaksta. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is dedicated both to Andy and Jason. And I think we've talked about it before, but it's Marvel Comics Unlimited, now available as a native app on the iPhone and the iPad. It's like it's people call it similar to Netflix. It's not exactly Netflix because it's like Netflix for only one network. You get access to all of Marvel's, I think it's 60 or 70,000 back issues. And I was using this on the airplane. I've been traveling a lot, and I read my way through Peter David's Hulk run, and now I'm reading old Arthur Adams drawn comics. And it's just, it's a fantastically large library. The app isn't great. It's like a web wrapper at this point. It does a lot of really, really weird things, but they're improving it slowly, and I'm hoping that it gets really good. But it's all about the content library. Jason did a great article, I think, on Macworld about it, and it's just... It's fantastic to have all that stuff available on demand on your iPad.
Yeah, it goes back, what, a year-ish, and then there's a bunch of classic stuff. And the native part is in the sort of like accessing the database, so you can kind of like go through and browse by issue. The reader itself, they built an HTML5, and it does have some quirks, although it is getting better. And I feel like you really need a full-size iPad to really appreciate it, because zooming is where it gets really weird. But yeah, for an annual fee or a monthly fee, you get access to read as many comics as you like. I sat down on a rainy, like Saturday afternoon, and read the entire Immortal Iron Fist series by the guys who are doing Hawkeye now, which is an awesome comic, and that's like 20 issues or something like that. And it was covered. I already spent my money, and I could rip through one issue after another, and it was all covered, and it was a lot of fun. So it's pretty cool if you're somebody who loves Marvel and is not like. You don't have to be current with the latest and greatest. Yeah. It's what, 10,000 plus, 13,000 plus issues,
holy
including
moly.
Some recent stuff, as that's well as stuff crazy. From like the 60s and 70s.
And how much?
It's I think the introductory special was $50 a year or something.
Yeah, it's $50 a year, and there's price. Also a monthly rate.
If I buy the year, can I continue to read them after it expires?
No. It's like Netflix, where it's only to active subscribers. Oh. Although I should say, unlike Netflix, you can cash up to 6 issues locally. Yeah. So if you're going on a plane trip or into the subway or whatever, you can cash 6 issues the size of a comics trade, and then read those when you're offline, which is cool.
Marvel Unlimited. It's streaming comics.
It is.
Andy Iannacco, your pick.
This isn't necessarily a new app, but it's one that I just discovered, rather started using as a regular thing a couple months ago. It's going to be familiar to a lot of people. It's a to-do manager called Any.do.
Oh, I love it.
And I love it, right? It's there's no shortage of like to-do list and list managers out there. The problem is finding the one that is hooked in that you can actually successfully use. There are a lot of apps are too they try to be too rigid and complicated, and I don't really go with rigid and complicated. And there are kinds where they're too static; they're not quite as engaged. Like I can make lists to the day goes gray, but then I need to remember to do the things that are on this list, which is why I like Any.do. Because number one, it's a very, very clean, very, very pretty interface. I don't know if you can see. I've got the 2X version on my iPad here. Very, very easy. And to add a new item, all you got to do is just swipe down from the top. And now you've just got either through the microphone or just by typing it in, you can give a new to-do list item. But look how nicely it's set up. It's not only is it a list of things you hope to get done, but also you can these are two items that are under today. If I decide that, OK, I'm not going to edit that new book of the Bible today, I will shift that to tomorrow. So you just simply drag that into tomorrow or upcoming or someday. Just nice, vague things are still quite useful. The thing that I really, really like about it, though, and this is what really made it into a winner for me, is last month they added a feature called the Any Do Moment. But you can set it so that every day at the same time, what it's going to do is it's going to actually wake up and sort of not interrupt, but simply give you a reminder and say, would you like to walk through? Here, I'm going to activate it manually right now. And it gives you this nice animation. and quietly just, it's like the assistant walking in saying, okay, here are the things that are on your to-do list. Do you want to edit that new book of the Bible today or later? So I think I'm going to get that done later. Let's just postpone that for a day. Then the next thing, then it's going to ask you, do you want to do it tomorrow in a couple of days? And it'll go through every single thing on your list like that. And say, oh, no, I really got to return that shopping cart today, so I will definitely do that today. And then it will keep reminding you. You can say, I want to have that done by 7. And by going through every single item, by going through every single item on your list like that, it's a way to really figure out, not only does it collect all the things that you're hoping to get done, both things that are actually deadline specific and things that are just sort of vague goals, and sort of organize them into, here's the stuff that I'm going to be doing today as opposed to someday. Here are the things I really want to get done by 3. So please keep annoying me until I tap a button that says, yes, I've done that. Please dispose of this. So like I said, there are a lot of to-do lists, a lot of organizers. Very few of them are... That's the one that's best keyed into the way that a to-do list manager is going to work for me, and the way that it's keyed into times and days and calendars really makes it very, very useful for me. So it's also, it's free and it's multi-platform.
Yeah, so, I concur. I use it and I love it. And I really like the new review thing. That's just a great addition.
Yeah. And it's, as I said, the great thing is that you kind of want to worry about using something that's only available on one platform, because ideally, if this works great for you, you're never going to want to do without it. And you would hate to have to stick to one device because, oh, well, I can't do without any do. So I'm going to have to stick with my
Android.
I'm going to have to stick with my BlackBerry Curve because I can't.
Now,
it's the only device that runs it.
On iOS, on the Android, it syncs with Google Tasks, which is nice because that gives me a central repository. Does it work with Apple's reminders, or does it just use Google?
It will link into your calendars and your contacts, you can also sync through a central any.do service, right?
Yeah, okay. That's cool.
So again, you can do it. It's not just tomorrow. Oh, the hippie. Oh, how about tomorrow? How about someday? You can say that the second Wednesday of every month is the day that I have curbside recycling. So the night before, please remind me to get the recycling bin out. And we'll just take care of that until the second coming of Jesus Christ.
Any dot do. It's hard to find. You got to make sure you type it right. A-N-Y period D-O. And you'll find it then. Jason Snell, your pick of the week, and if it's Stickman Golf, you're in trouble.
It is not. Okay. Those guys are already really mad at me. But it is an iPhone app, and I can show it here. I think we've got the magic. Do we have the magic camera that looks at us from above and sees the backs of our heads? I don't know. It's called
Sees All.
There it is. Sees All, Knows All. All right. It's called Forecast. And see, I've got it here on my iPhone. I'm going to tap the button, and the app loads. And it's a weather app, and you're saying to yourself, why is a weather app that interesting? It is kind of a beautiful design. It's got the little slidey box to let you pick what your location wants to be. But what's really cool about it, and I can look like here's the next week forecast, and I can drill down, and it's got like a little it's very pretty. It's from the guys who did the Dark Sky app.
Ah, I love Dark Sky,
which lets you see when the rain is coming. It's got these beautiful maps. Here's the thing about forecast. It's back in 2007, when they introduced the iPhone, they were yelled at for saying that web apps were a sweet solution for developers, and nobody needed to develop real apps because they could just use web apps. Well, it took, 6 years? Forecast is a web app. It looks like a native app.
You're at forecast.io, aren't
It's forecast.io. Yeah. There's also you can load it in your browser, but if you load it on your iPhone... and save it. It says save this to your desktop, and then when you load it, you can't tell that it's not a native app. There's no, like, if you scroll up, it does a scroll to reload. It doesn't bring up a browser bar or anything. And it's a really nice app too. But I love the fact that this is all happening with HTML5, and we have finally reached the point where somebody very clever could build a beautiful app like this. And it's not in the App Store. You just go to forecast.io.
It's so iOS-y with the sliding and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's got all the tricks.
Yeah.
It feels like a native app.
Yeah.
Well, the slidey thing is kind of more like Windows Phone, isn't it? I'm seeing that conceit in so many apps now where instead of having drill down into a settings bar, let's just have you slide off to the left or slide off to the right to bring in a panel.
Apple's done some of that too, so it kind of goes, and it's got the pull to refresh, which is all Lauren Brichter too.
Right,
so.
There's a lot of Lauren Brichter in there.
Yeah,
in design circles, they call that the hamburger in the basement. So you have a hamburger for the menu button, and you throw a bunch of junk into the basement because you don't know where to put it. And Facebook was one of the first who did that, and the Gmail app for iOS was one of the first that did that. And now everybody's doing it; it's the hot thing in design.
And the booger pull.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, look, it's a hand.
Refresh.
All right.
That's the hamburger in the basement you just saw right there.
Yeah, that's what happens when we don't have a...
if you show my screen, show my screen, because this is how it looks on IE. I mean, it's just, it's equally beautiful. Yeah. So,
the interesting thing is that for as much as people give Apple grief about web apps and openness, they always said that HTML5 was their second developer platform, and they made web.app so that you could have icons on the home screen, and they'd be equal citizens, and they provide tremendous support for those kind of apps.
Right.
And here's a great example of it. Yeah. You know, it took a while, but this is immaculate.
Yeah. To be fair, that wasn't Apple's doing. That was the HTML5 standards Bureau doing, and also a lot of independent developers creating their own kits that you can simply put it. You can these whole libraries for building web apps that are going to work great for. And how many apps are, if you want the weather, chances are you don't want to cache the weather from yesterday. You're probably going to be connected right. connected online anyway.
DVR for weather.
Exactly.
Right.
Came home from vacation. I want to replay every day that I missed.
It'll do that. It'll play back your weather radar for the past week, and then
there you go.
Radar for the future.
That's where my roof went.
Fear of missing out, my weather. So my tips are something that I'm going to refer you back to our last week's know-how, where I took a Mac Pro and tried to bring it to the 21st century. Actually, it was the most recent Mac Pro, which came out in the summer of 2010, so it's almost 3 years old now. And one of the things that was wrong with it was the video card was an old Radeon, 60-something. 5000 series, 5500. Mm-hmm. So right when I decided to do this upgrade, the folks at Sapphire put out their Mac Edition, the HD 7950. I think I talked about this last week.
During the show.
You're having trouble getting performance out.
Well, I couldn't get very good OpenGL benchmark numbers out of it. In fact, it seemed like it actually slowed the system down a little bit. I conferred with the folks at PC Perspective, Ryan Shred, who really knows about benchmarking, and we concluded that it's Apple's OpenGL stack, which is not very good. And in fact, to kind of give you the follow-up on this, when I booted up into boot camp, I got twice the performance in Windows. Twice the performance. So I think it really is an issue of Apple's OpenGL drivers. That doesn't mean, though, you won't get benefit on Photoshop, Final Cut. It just won't be in games that use OpenGL that you'll see the benefit of that. It is expensive, too, $450. That's $50 more than the PC version. However, and you can use PC versions. Renee and I were talking about this last week. So I got a PC version of the card, ordered it. It came. But it doesn't come with the right connectors, right? There's no mini display port. There's no – the power connectors are supposed to go to a PC power supply, not the Mac Pro. Now, you can motherboard as this card. So I think it's worth getting – spend $50 more on getting the Mac Edition. If you wanted a different card that's not made for the Mac, the drivers are in OS 10, 10.8 now, which is good news. But you'll have to spend a little extra time getting the right dongles and connectors to make it work. I'm not going to fully recommend this, although I have to say running – BioShock Infinite in Windows is great on this on my Mac Pro.
So if you're doing boot camp on your Mac,
boot camp or Final Cut or Photoshop, whatever, you'd get some benefit from this. It's about twice as fast. This I cannot hesitate to recommend. It's expensive, but boy, is this great! This is from Otherworld Computing. Their Mercury Excelsior. It's a PCI Express based SSD, which means it goes on the PCI Express bus. I have never seen faster benchmarks in my life. Read and write speeds of about half a gigabyte per second. Unbelievable. And I think it's so satisfying. It literally is like a hot rod. These are socketed, these little connectors. So you could buy one that you could afford today, but then get new socketed memory upgrades later. They have a variety of sizes depending on your budget. I bought one that was able to hold my entire Mac installation, my OS X installation, and all the apps I use, and that was the 240 gig. That's about $479. So it's pricey, but my God. Now, I did not make a Fusion Drive out of that after reading about all the problems people are having with Fusion Drives. Besides, the Fusion Drive would slow this down.
Yeah, and you don't really need the Fusion Drive if you're capable of managing files yourself. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's,
I can figure
Fusion
that
Drive
out.
Fusion Drive is more like for people who like don't know where they
don't
want to
know about it, and they want a 3 terabyte hard drive. And you, Alex, it was you who said, just put the card. You want the
that's
raw speed.
Yeah, but man, once you go SSD, you will never
go
back.
Well, that's the thing.
I get on my laptops with SSD, and you just
like going to broadband.
Yeah.
We have a handful of our retinas have regular drives in them. You know, we have a lot of them that are all SSD. And I open it up, and I was using one the other day, and I was like, what is wrong with this computer? I was like, we're going to have to send it in. And someone said, oh, no, that doesn't have an SSD. I was like, oh, never mind.
It's fine.
Here's the Blackmagic speed test. I've never seen, and this, by the way, is pegging the meters. So I don't, it could be faster than that. It's just they couldn't measure it. I don't know.
It's a number not yet known to man.
It's so fast. I've never seen anything this fast. Highly recommend. That's an upgrade under $500 that if you have an old Mac Pro and you just want to give it a little bit of life, that's enough to make you feel like, boy, this is a pretty fast computer. And, you know, this was a quad core. Dual core quad processor Xeon. It's a Nehalem chip. It's a fast machine,
right?
Even though it's 2.5 years old, putting an SSD on there really kind of sped it up.
Memory and hard drive speed are the two things that you could, the easiest, cheapest things to do to speed
and
up.
And it's easy to add memory to this. It's got four slots. Yeah. I have 8 gigs in it, but to be honest, I don't feel like I need more than 8 gigs. Maybe you do because of what you do.
I think ours are kind of set up at 16. I don't see a reason to go over 16.
Yeah. Easy to put another 8 gigs in. It's got two free slots. Get the SSD. That's the best thing. Yeah. Now, the Sapphire is, if you're going to play games on the Windows side, it's going to make a difference. And if you're going to use Photoshop and you want fast Gaussian blurs, it's going to make a difference.
Right.
Not sure I could recommend it, but at least I have a more modern machine.
Yeah. I mean, and what we've done with some of the machines is to an SSD to start up so and then raid three other cheap drives to the other ones.
That's what I was going to do, is take the old drives and raid them.
You just raid them up. Raid them. And we raid them zero, and then we call them...
Scary raid.
That's what they're all called, scary raid. Scary raid 14, scary raid 11. Right. You know, it's to remind everyone that, you know, this is...
These will die.
Oh, and I think we discussed the whole, like, when you go from Mountain Lion to... when you go from Mountain Lion up, you, when I redid it lost the raid. So I had to back. I had to.
Right.
It was kind of scary.
You're going to lose
crap. Very scary.
And that's the other reason to do the Fusion Drive, because if you want to ever unpair them, you're going to lose everything. Mm-hmm. I think Fusion has other issues. Bootcamp, for instance, still doesn't work with the Fusion, even though they said that it does work now with 3 terabyte drives. I tried it on my iMac with Fusion and said, no, we won't install Windows for you. Sorry. Can't do it.
Fusion's a great idea. It's just early.
Yeah.
Early yet.
And Apple, of course, doesn't support do-it-yourself Fusion. So it's not hard to do.
No, you can do it yourself.
It's easy to do it yourself. They just don't support it. And so might not be worth the trouble. The genius will frown at you if you bring your Mac in with a Fusion drive on it. Because it's Apple's.
As long as it's a user-facing feature. Just think about how much faster that beach ball cursor is going to spin once you're using Fusion or SSD.
But, look at that. Does that not make you just when you put your when you put your benchmark on there and it pegs the benchmark?
That just benchmark feels good. Goes to 11.
There's no difference between car tuners and like PC tuners, because we just want to see that higher number. And then if we finish it, we're awesome. We've tweeted the screenshot of the benchmark results, and then we go back to work and we realize that I just spent $900 to make the cursor blink. To make more instructions have between cursor blinks while I'm not writing something.
Right. And the people that are really benefiting from that are when you're throwing, uncompressed HD up there that you're the reason we were using.
Well, let me just show you the before, okay?
Right.
That's the SATA drive before.
Right.
On a Mac Pro.
And when you're talking about production, for the people that actually need this kind of speed, we were doing compositing. One of the reason we were doing these machines is we had 100 green screen shots of people in the back of a car, and they have all these green screen. We had to remove it all. It's not hard, but it takes a long time to render. So we're sitting there in motion with it looping from the hard drive into RAM, and it's literally playing back in real time, and we're able to sit there and adjust all of our keys. That reduces the amount of time you work on it for by days, which of course pays off the project. I mean, pays off the upgrades. So the people who are buying these are, other than the people that want to see their cursor go faster, are people who are actually trying to run multiple, so 2 or 3 streams of HD.
Yeah. And if you spend 4K, $5,000 or $6,000 on your Mac Pro,
this is
and Apple refuses to give you anything newer.
Right,
$500,
and then they have the external ones. Say the external one for Thunderbolt. So you can now. Ooh, so I, if I want,
where
that,
do I get my Thunderbolt on my Mac Pro?
Well, no,
can't
I'm
do it
for my laptop.
Oh, and by the way, one
for
more
my
thing.
Laptop.
We speculated that maybe I could run a Thunderbolt display off the Mini Display Port. No,
you cannot.
And there's no way.
No, it doesn't go that way.
It's the same
port, but it doesn't.
Doesn't go that way.
You can use
videos on it.
You can plug Mini Display Port into a Thunderbolt port. You cannot plug a Thunderbolt into a Mini Display Port and have it do something.
Yeah, because I thought I'm going to put my Thunderbolt display and my LED cinema display on here, and only one worked. Period.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's all right. It was just a thought. All right. Hey, what a great show. Thank you guys for being here. Mr. Rene Ritchie, iMore.com. If you want the latest on Macintosh and everything all about it, it's always good to have you, Rene. Did you have a nice time when you were visiting?
Oh, it was fantastic. I always love being in the studio with you guys.
We love having you here.
It's like being at Disneyland or something.
Yeah. And you had a nice visit to the Bay Area. What were you here for? GDC?
GDC, yes, sir.
Would you learn anything?
Just that free-to-play is the future of video games,
yeah,
Leo.
No kidding. The Game Developers Conference is all about apps. Used to be about, you know, first-person shooters.
Well, what's interesting is that there was two really interesting things. First is that mobile is starting to eclipse console, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And also that while everything is cross-platform and they're really platform-agnostic, the developers themselves are all using iPads. So that's what they showed the games off on.
Really?
That's so our Android site was getting upset because they're like, we can't keep putting up these videos of iPads. Like, I can't tell developers what they're allowed to use.
Yeah, that's what they're using.
Yeah,
that's why I use a fine Windows 8 machine. That and I don't want to have any hair by the end of the show. I want to just tear it all out. Mr. Alex Lindsay from Pixel Core.
Yes.
Nice to have you.
It's good to be here.
Keep up the good work. Nothing to say. Nothing
to
plug.
I keep on posting stuff. The best thing to do is just find me on G+ or Twitter. Those are the two places that I really...
At Alex Lindsay or Alex Lindsay? S-A-Y.
S-A-Y. Just Alex Lindsay. You'll find
say Lindsay.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Yes.
Editorial director at the fabulous IDG for both Macworld and PC World. He crosses the aisle easily, fluidly, simply, without any trouble, Mr. Jason Snell. Always a pleasure.
It's great to be here.
Thank you for making the trip up.
Always great.
Yep. Andy Inako, Chicago Sun-Times, the Calvin and Hobbes of Mac journalists. We did a great interview with Andy last week on our triangulation show, so watch it. I think it was episode 96. It's a must-watch, twit.tv/TRI, if you want to find out.
We had a real Oprah Lance Armstrong thing going on there.
It was beautiful.
We captured a little bit of magic there.
I think of more of as Oprah and Tom Cruise.
Andy jump on the couch?
Yeah, when he jumped up on the couch, that was a moment.
It's my own couch, and I gotta clean those damn cushions.
Great to have you all. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. I hope you'll watch live. Our chat room is a big part of the show, and we love having you here. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video are available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW for Mac Break Weekly. And, of course, if you subscribe, you'll guarantee to get every version every week. Not every version, just every episode every week. iTunes has it. Everybody has it. Thanks for joining us. Now get back to work because break time is over.